Welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. It's the first Friday of the month, and that means we have convened the movie mavens, Jed Dietz and Ann Horn, today to talk about movies coming up for the summer. It's the blockbuster weekend. So, Jed, good to see you. How you doing?
Good to see you. Thanks.
Excited about your 4th of July weekend?
I am.
You got fireworks in the future?
I think we do, yeah.
Good. And Ann, how about you?
Yes, good.
R&R. You're going to be lighting things?
I might light a sparkler.
There you go. Throw it off the roof. Do something festive.
Just hold it.
Just hold it.
Oh. Yes.
All right. But this is, of course, the weekend that all the big summer blockbusters get released. By the way, how did the term blockbuster come to be in movies? Because, you know, in real estate, blockbusting is a terrible thing.
That's a good point.
About racism and kicking people out of neighborhoods and, you know, convincing people that the values in their neighborhood are going to go down if, you know, people of color move in. That's what it means in real estate. I wonder how that term came to be.
That
in
is
movies.
An excellent question.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it until just now.
Yeah, so, I have no idea. Daily Variety.
There you go. All right, we will look it up. We will look it up and figure it out for next time. But it's interesting that you know, all the movies sort of, there's the Christmas movies and then there's summer movies, and it's 4th of July weekend that all the summer movies come out. We're going to talk a little bit about the sort of anti-blockbusters, right? So, Anne, I guess the AFI docs, the American Film Institute documentaries, were just screened, was it last weekend?
Just last weekend, exactly, yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell folks about the importance of that particular gathering.
Well, you know, it comes at a at an important time in the year because summer, like you said, we have these blockbusters all summer, but resourceful and creative film people have found ways to kind of sneak in smaller movies for those audiences who don't necessarily want to go see Independence Day and Suicide Squad and all the rest. And documentaries are a big part of that counter-programming. So summer's kind of been an unofficial documentary season. You're going to see a lot of nonfiction movies arriving in theaters over the next couple of months, and many of them get their start over at AFI Docs, down at AFI Docs in Washington.
And it's interesting, Jed, I mean, I guess the number of movies that big Hollywood studios are producing each year has gone down somewhat exponentially, has it not? Over the last several years?
Yeah, it has. You know, it was in the hundreds. Well, going back to the 40s, I mean, they were making a movie a week, each studio. Now they're down to about 150 releases a year.
And that's down from, like, about, say, 400 or so not too long ago.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And they've just, you know, they've sort of, it's a pure corporate decision that, you know, they have these great big machines to market movies worldwide, and nobody else does. And so they're concentrating on movies that are great big machines and can be marketed that way. Totally rational. It leaves all the rest of it, the documentaries and smaller independent films, which is the growing part of the film world in terms of what's being created, to other people.
Yeah.
And the audience is totally curious about all of that, the studio movies, but certainly the documentaries and the smaller independent narratives. And as Anne said, I mean, the growth of the documentary-only festival has been fascinating. Since we started, AFI Docs has come on stream. There's a wonderful festival in Missouri called True Faults, run by filmmakers affiliated with a church that they've sort of brought in. Look, I mean, they're really incredible. Full Frame in Durham, now affiliated with Duke University, and then Hot Docs in Toronto, and there are a few others, Rotterdam. I mean, there are a few others worldwide, but it's fascinating.
And of course, the Maryland Film Festival, which you just had a big success with just last month, always has a very healthy dose of docs, plus, you know, fiction films, and you guys have done that forever. And I guess most film festivals now, I mean, Sundance and New York, Tribeca, and all that, they have a mix of docs and narrative fiction.
Yeah, I would say Sundance was really a pioneer in honoring docs and giving them, I mean, they really started with narrative and doc competitions, and that was unusual then in the film festival world.
Yeah. Well, I'm always excited to see you guys, but I am extra excited this morning because I have not only seen one, I have seen two movies that we can actually talk about.
Oh, my God. This is a banner day.
So, exactly. So
I'm going to light two sparklers this weekend.
Because longtime listeners to the program know that I live a completely pathetic life and I never go out. But I have seen not one, but two movies that we can actually legitimately talk about in terms of alternative programming to Blockbuster. All so right. I'm very excited. So let me just casually mention the movie about Norman Lear,
oh, yeah.
which I saw at the Maryland Film Festival. This was a great doc and a great, I forget the title of it actually. As a matter of fact, I don't have it written
just
down.
Just Another Version of You.
Just Another Version of You. Of course, Norman Lear, the great television pioneer. But Anne, his impact on social, the culture of the United States of America cannot be understated.
Exactly. And it was, that was the closing night film of AFI Docs on Sunday night. So the audience had the supreme pleasure of seeing the man in full, you know, and he is at 94 years of age, an absolute wonder, both in terms of his physical condition and mental and his mental condition, curiosity and verve. And you're right. I mean, the documentary really does, I think, kind of pay homage and appropriately elevate him to his proper place in our cultural history. And there's a scene in the movie where Amy Poehler is paying tribute to him, where she makes a joke, but that, you know, that kind of socially aware satire. I mean, we had had sitcoms before, but not satires. I mean, satire is a completely different genre.
So All in the Family.
Exactly, and All in the Family being, yeah, that's the Maude, big breakthrough.
I mean, these are
right,
some of the big shows that
exactly.
He did.
Yeah. And Good Times and the Jeffersons, but you know, there really aren't that many mainstream comedies that are doing that kind of cultural work today.
Yeah.
And you have to remember he had 7 primetime shows on. I mean, it's unheard of. And this is
at the same time.
Yeah. This is a time when, you know, a hit show like All in the Family, one of his shows, would draw 23 million households every week to the screen. And the whole idea.
And now those are kind of like Super Bowl numbers or something, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they're just a gigantic thing.
And he was, as Anne said, I mean, these things were very funny. They hold up really well. There are lots of clips in this film from some of these shows that are, you laugh out loud mm-hmm. now. But they're about people who are very different with very different political and cultural views of the world. We didn't even know the word globalization then, but of that kind of, you know, acclimation of different kinds of people. And they're funny, and he makes fun of all kinds of people with all kinds of different views lovingly. And I think that's a huge difference. And you see families in All in the Family very much in love with each other and caring for each other with very different viewpoints on things. And so it's unusual in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was such an important cultural force in the entertainment world and it in a way that isn't seen at all, not just in the numbers, but in the way he did it too.
Here's a little clip from the documentary about Norman Lear.
It's time for God's people to come out of the churches and change America.
I was concerned about what I was seeing on television, mixing politics and religion. So I thought, I want to take the flag back for all of us.
He called me and said, guess what? I own the Declaration of Independence.
Well, after, you know, just has to add time. You know, if lifting weights or running, you know, can add time. God, how laughter can add time. Remember, you heard it here.
Guys like us, we had it made.
Yeah, Archie Bunker, and there's some great stuff about All in the Family behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, his conversations with Carol O'Connor about certain subjects, or a couple that Carol O'Connor didn't want to do.
Oh, yeah, they had a very contentious. I mean, that's not necessarily plumbed in the movie, but they had a really contentious relationship. And for me, one of the best, one of the most appealing conceits within the film is when some of the stars of those original shows are watching the clips and the filmmakers film them watching themselves and watching these. And not just, you know, so John Amos is watching a clip from Good Times. Or Russell Simmons is, I mean, there's an amazing shot of Russell Simmons watching the Jeffersons. Yeah. And so you're getting that, you know.
He's the big hip-hop impresario.
Yeah, and you're getting that sense of just the watershed nature of these conversations that these shows were opening up, and how powerful they still are.
Ann Hornaday is a film critic for The Washington Post. Jed Dietz is the executive director of the Maryland Film Festival. It's the monthly Maryland Morning Movie Mayhem. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us today. We're talking movies for this 4th of July weekend. I mean, it's really a really great inside look into normally. So as I said, I have seen it.
Well done, sir.
I have nothing intelligent to say about it, but I would just like to say I really enjoyed it.
Good.
I laughed, I cried. Yes. You know, it was great.
So, and that'll be out in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yes, and then it'll be on American Masters later on.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So plenty of ways to see it. Yep. There's one, Jed, that you've seen a movie called Kate Plays Christine.
Yeah.
This wasn't at AFI, but it's an interesting doc. What's this one about?
Yes, this is a documentary about an actress preparing to play a role that eventually never gets filmed, and I'm not sure it was ever intended to be filmed, but the role is a woman who was a reporter on a small station in Sarasota, Florida, and in 1974 shot herself and killed herself on the air. And the actress, Caitlin Scheel, who's been in House of Cards and a lot of independent films, you see this whole process of her preparing that scene, the public on air scene of killing herself. And it's a fascinating story and exploration of the artistic process, but also as you're watching it, you're sucked in to this, what do you want to see, you know? And I think this is a very crucial thing in our culture. You know, it's a horrifying thing. You know it's a horrifying thing. And as they're preparing to create that scene, the actress and the crew, I think all the way through, you've got to be sort of saying, do I want them to do this or not?
Decisions have to be made in movies.
Yeah. And nobody's going to get hurt. I mean, it's not because anything real is going to happen. But should the audience see it? Should I see it? Do I want to see it? Mm-hmm. And so it works on so many levels.
Really great, interesting question.
Yeah.
I want to keep moving through some of these titles because we have so much to talk about. And there's a movie called Life Animated. Mm-hmm. There's a local connection to this movie, a guy named Roger Ross Williams, who also did music by Prudence. He's affiliated with Mica, I guess. Is that right, Jen?
That film was, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so Life Animated, what's this one about?
Yeah, this also played at AFI Docs last weekend, and it's the story of a young man named Owen Suskind, who, when he was 3 years old, was diagnosed with autism and really closed off from his family, stopped communicating, stopped talking, kind of went into his own world and very isolated, and the family couldn't get to him. And the one thing that he loved in life were Disney cartoons and was transfixed by those. And one day his father, Ron, who's a really well-known journalist and author, happened to pick up a puppet of Iago, the little parrot from the Aladdin movie, and started speaking with Owen in the parrot voice, and Owen started talking, and this whole family discovered that their way in to this boy and his way out to them was through Disney cartoons. So it's a film just about that journey, and about this extraordinary young man who, like Norman Lear, showed up at the Q&A and was the star of the show. He was at the Maryland Festival too. Wasn't he?
His brother Walter was there.
Good.
Yeah, Owen couldn't come, but Walt was there, and Roger was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's another movie I want to mention briefly. It's no longer at the Charles, but it's on demand, which I actually saw as well. It's Wiener. It's about Anthony Wiener and his campaign for mayor after the revelations of his, you know, sexting came out. So, what's fascinating about it is the incredible access that these filmmakers had. I mean, there are places in that movie you just cringe thinking that he's in a room and there's people with a camera pointed towards him. I mean, how do documentarians get this? I mean, the relationship between the filmmaker and their subjects is incredibly intimate.
Well, I think it's a skill a really good documentary filmmakers have, which is to get their subjects to trust them. And they earn it. I mean, that's not a trick. They earn it. In this case, I think the main subject, Congressman Wiener, has an appetite for attention that the film shows you that I think all politicians have it to some degree, right? Or you don't become a politician. Same for actors. And this is an extreme version of that appetite. And I think what the insight of that that you get through this film without, I mean, it's not exposition. I mean, it's not like anybody talks to you about it. It's just you see it, you're watching it. And in contrast to his wife, Huma Abedin, who is the opposite.
I mean, obviously, a close confidant and aide to Hillary Clinton
and, since she was Secretary of State and working with her on the campaign. And her, I mean, she's clearly fascinated by people with this appetite for attention and, you know, to use it. But she's a completely different personality. She's very private. She's, and so, I mean, you couldn't have cast this movie better. And I think the access question is a really good one. And I don't think to this day we have a complete answer of why they went through.
We do. No, it was directed by, it was co-directed by a guy named Josh Kriegman who worked for Wiener in Congress. So that's, he was a staffer. I mean, it's not like he
came to
this.
So they knew each other, yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that should have been disclosed in the film.
Oh, well, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, but, because, you know, I think all the viewers of the film have that question. I just feel like it wouldn't have taken anything away from the experience of that movie for him to have come clean about that.
I agree, but that only explains the beginning. You know, you know that opens the door the first time. Why is the camera left in the room so often, you know? And that, I think, has more to do with
narcissism.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And of course, you know, Lord knows how much he shot and what they didn't put in the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, the filmmaker who made the Norman Lear movie, a woman who's actually has a couple of Baltimore connections, and I'm blanking on her name.
Rachel Grady.
Yeah.
And Rachel's on our board.
And they said that they shot, you know, hundreds of hours of stuff, and it's a two-hour movie, you know, two-and-a-half-hour movie, so who knows. All right, well, we will continue this discussion when we come back after a break for the news. Ann Hornaday, Jed Dietz, thanks for being here. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Before we come back and talk more about antidotes to summer blockbusters, we're going to hear a Baltimore story from our good friend Gil Sandler.
If you want to join in on the conversation, go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our audio archives there and learn more about what you just heard, or even make a pledge to support local programming. Again, that's at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. First Friday of the month means we talk movies with our movie mavens, Ann Hornaday, the award-winning film critic for The Washington Post, and Jed Dietz, the executive director of the Maryland Film Festival. We're talking about documentaries and some movies that are sort of counter-programmed to all these summer blockbusters for all the folks who have inclinations to see Independence Day or Star Trek or something like that. We've got some other suggestions for you as well this morning. Jed, I want to talk about another documentary about a huckster doctor, a guy named Dr. Brinkley, and the movie is called Nuts. This character sounds wild.
So this is a guy who grew up in Kansas. He announced that he had a cure for impotence, which had to do with placing goat testicles inside the patient. And he built this into a huge business. He made himself very wealthy. He owned a large radio station at one point. He ran for governor of Kansas at one point. And it's, again, a part of our culture. I'd never heard of this guy before I saw the movie, that is in our culture, right? I mean, we're susceptible.
What's the time period that this guy was in his heyday?
Early part of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. It was 20s and 30s.
He died in 36, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is amazing to think that anybody could sort of fall for that. You know, most of the scams you hear about now are sort of financial. They're not medical
or
like
political.
Or political. Yeah. But it's really quite something. But so a documentary about a guy who died in 1936, that's a different kettle of fish, isn't it, than, you know, doing a documentary about Anthony Weiner.
But the same sort of elements, because he had an unquestioned belief in this, or said he had this belief in it. You don't know what's in his head, I guess. But and then you see him parlay it into bigger and better things. And he was sort of insightful. I mean, this radio station thing that he created really changed radio broadcasting at the time. And so he was this odd mix, as I think charlatans often are, of very bright, very charismatic, with some kernel of truth in it, and then maybe doing some good in some fields too.
Yeah, I mean, Anne is, you know, obviously the standard bearer for the Republican Party has been accused of being a carnival barker, a huckster. Mm-hmm. Is this kind of movie sort of relevant and resonating now because of this particular moment that we're in the American political process?
Definitely. And the filmmaker, Penny Lane, her most recent film was a movie called Our Nixon, which was a fascinating film that was constructed from the home movies that Nixon's colleagues in the White House were taking, just because they were so excited to be there and they all had new cameras. It was these, you know, these
Haldeman
little 8mm.
Colson and those guys. They were
I can't remember the aides' names right now, but it's just beautiful footage. And so she put it together in a kind of a witty way, actually. And I think at one point he talks about All in the Family in that movie and criticizes that. But so she has that same sort of whimsical eye in this film, which is completely animated. There are some live action talking heads. She talks to historians and biographers and stuff like that. So, no, there's no question that the filmmakers are interested in making connections with our present day culture.
There's a movie, Anne, that's opening tonight at the Charles. It's called Tickled. What's that one about?
Yes. This is a movie about a journalist in New Zealand who's sort of a human interest pop culture reporter for his television station, very engaging, charismatic guy, who happens upon a video of young men engaging in quote-unquote competitive endurance tickling. And it's just so bizarre and weird that there's something for everyone in this world of ours. Nothing new under the sun. So he wants to follow up and do a story because it looks like a fun story. And he quickly, when he starts to, you know, get to the people who produced the video and put it up, he experiences this very vicious, paranoid pushback from a woman named Jane O'Brien, who apparently is the producer of these videos. And so then his quest begins to be, why this reaction from her? Who is she? What's going on? So Tickled goes from being you think it's going to be kind of this human side of a fetish community, and it instead goes really into this very dark, dark, disquieting territory of exploitation, abuse of power, probably criminality. I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but it becomes a really disturbing portrait and a kind of an investigative mystery story.
Mm. Competitive tickling.
Yeah, so, the dark side.
Is there a light side
there
to competitive
is. Well,
tickling?
I mean, to his credit,
I mean, obviously
he does
people
find...
chuckle when they get tickled, but I mean...
Yeah, well, there's no question that it's, you know, that it has issues of dominance and submission and all. You know, it's a part of that world. But he does find a person who's not, quote-unquote, a bad guy.
Right.
You know, he does find that sort of human side of that community, but it really becomes much more about a particular individual that is... up to no good.
Yeah. I've heard so much about it, I can't wait to see it.
Mm. Let me casually mention another title of a movie that I've actually seen.
Oh!
Because I just, you know, sorry, this is actually
the
third one. You know?
Now you're just showing off.
I am, because I have not seen three movies in the last 10 years of this program, but I have seen three since we last talked. And this is a movie called Deepan. It's about Sri Lankan refugees who end up in Paris, and chaos ensues. But this is a charming movie, I thought, and a very profound movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and here we are a week past Brexit, and you know, immigration being a key issue there. This is the other point of view. This is the refugee and what you go through. And then your effort to just fit in to this new culture, in this case, a public housing unit outside of Paris, it ends up in a way that the ending I wasn't wild about, but I think it's an incredible portrait. I think the three leads are phenomenal.
Yeah, and given the Brexit vote, this tells the story from the point of view of the immigrant.
Absolutely.
And of course this won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, and you were there to see it there.
It did. I mean, it's by Jacques Audiard, who's probably still best known for his movie A Prophet, which was just a truly extraordinary, you know, just a masterful film. I wouldn't put this up in that class. I didn't think it deserved the Palme d'Or. I felt that Son of Saul deserved the Palme d'Or last year. But that, and I totally agree with Jed, it goes into this kind of genre territory that is
jarring.
It is jarring, yes.
Yeah, no, it is.
And it felt, it doesn't match up. But you know, with these people that we meet, and the kind of what's fascinating about the story and the characters is that they're kind of thrown together in this improvised family. I mean, they're not related. They pretend to be related in order to get refugee status, and it's just so it has that other layer.
It's fascinating on all sorts of levels. Okay, always fun to talk to you guys. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you.
And look forward to seeing you next month.
Happy 4th.
Sparklers, everybody.
Sparklers, everybody. Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival and Hornaday from the Washington Post. We've got a link to some of the movies we've talked about on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Maryland Morning's director, engineer, and co-host is Nathan Sterner. The show is produced by Rob Sivak, Bridget Armstrong, and Kathleen Cahill, with production assistance from Lauren Ferguson. Shane Raphael is our intern. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Maryland Morning theme music. Coffee for our guests provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. You can find them online at zekescoffee.com. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday on a special 4th of July edition of Maryland Morning, a conversation with the leaders of Baltimore's Promise. It's an organization that brings together civic leaders to tackle the problems facing kids in Charm City, plus a book that suggests good reads for kids who are early and eager readers. That's all on the way Monday morning on Maryland Morning. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Garrison Keillor's up next with the Writer's Almanac. Have a great holiday weekend.